The new book, Ministry of Truth, Democracy, Reality, and the Republicans' War on the Recent Past by Steve Bannon, is an investigation of the Republican Party's dangerous campaign to rewrite recent history in real time. Bannon, a critically acclaimed author and Emmy Award-winning producer on The Rachel Maddow Show, offers a lens through which to view recent GOP misinformation campaigns, contextualizing aggressive partisan efforts to convince people not to believe their lying eyes, shining a spotlight on the degree to which these campaigns have succeeded, their dangerous consequences, and how they can be fought. Again, the name of the book is Ministry of Truth, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Steve Bannon to the program this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. A delight to have you.
Well, thank you, Jerry. It's a pleasure to be here.
I guess where to start, because you've spent a lot of time, written this book, and yet, yes. I mean, we could just like rip today's headlines out of the front page and say, all right, let's start here when it comes to truth and what we know.
Yes, I think that when an author has a new book coming out, he or she is always concerned, will it seem timely? And I think you're right. I think it's very generous of the political world to offer so many timely examples that, to help bolster the thesis of my book. You know, I was just watching Trump last week. He was at his rally in Montana. And then before then, he was having his press conference. There's a long meandering press conference at Mar-a-Lago. And I see him rewriting history in real time. He's saying that he never tried to prosecute Hillary Clinton. And we know the opposite. He said he won the 2020 election. And we know the opposite. And so time and again, not just over the course of his presidency, not just in the run-up to his candidacy in 2024, but literally within the last few days, we see him targeting events that we know the truth about, and yet he's rewriting, trying to rewrite history in real time. You know, one of the things I emphasize in my book is this idea that Trump and his allies and people like him tell Americans and voters not to believe their lying eyes. And it's against that backdrop that we see the former president and the Republican nominee publishing items to his social media account, telling people not to believe their lying eyes as it relates to Kamala Harris and her campaign rallies and the size of her audience. And it's extraordinary, of course, and it's breathtaking to a degree to see them engage with these tactics. But yet it's part of this larger strategy, which is why I wrote the book.
All right. So when did your thesis start to take hold, where you started to think, okay, this is a pattern and this is something that we need to track?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think for me personally, efforts to rewrite history are not new.
Right.
This effort to rewrite recent history and the degree to which these tactics are so pernicious and so uniquely dangerous, for me, it took place after January 6th. You know, the initial response from Republicans in Congress and on conservative media and elsewhere was the initial response was that really this was a tactic launched by the left, that these were leftists who had engaged in this insurrectionist riot at their own country's capital. And really, we should be blaming Antifa activists, whoever they are. This was the initial response. When that proved to be unsuccessful, Republicans turned that around and said, OK, well, maybe it wasn't Antifa. Maybe it was the FBI. Maybe it was pernicious people within the federal government who were responsible. And when that didn't work, they shifted gears again. And we said, hey, you know what? On second thought, all of these rioters are, in fact, heroes. The villains of the story are the heroes of the story, and that they are victims and they are hostages and they deserve our sympathy. And as I'm watching this play out in real time, I couldn't help but notice how familiar the tactics are. They're relying on the same strategies, the same scams, the same gaslighting campaigns, which really helped inspire the book that I ended up writing last year and is coming out now.
One of the things that you point out in the book, which I think is so important, is how astonishingly effective these efforts have been by Republicans and by Trump. And this rewriting of history works, and yet I'm still amazed by it. I still don't know how to react. So you mentioned this, but the former president says that writes on Truth Social that no one was at that the whole crowd for Kamala Harris at a rally was AI generated. It was fake. There was no one there. Now, so there are people there. We know we have the we have a lot of pictures. We have a lot of supporting documentation. You know, I watched yes. Jon Stewart on The Daily Show. It's really funny. Like, it is funny. And yet, is it? I don't know. I don't know how to react to it because it's you just think to yourself, oh, well, okay, so no one's going to buy this. And yet, they do.
Well, yes, that's exactly right. And you know, broadly speaking, it's really one of the reasons I wrote the book in the first place is that it seems absurd. You and I are watching these things unfold, and you're like, well, no one will believe that Kamala Harris was speaking to no one and that AI was necessary to create these. Just as no one would believe the idea that in January 6th, the rioters were the good guys. Or no one would believe that Trump's failed efforts to respond to COVID were somehow a triumph for the era, and that future generations will be singing songs about how amazing Trump was when he was responding to this public health crisis. It seems so outlandish. And yet, we know from all kinds of public opinion data that there is a huge percentage of Americans, in fact, a majority of Republican voters, who have come to believe that outside sources of information are not to be trusted. And if Trump says it and Fox says it and the congressional Republicans are all on the same page, then they have no choice but to go along because as far as they're concerned, those gaslighting campaigns are their version of reality. And so they have, I think it's fair to say the former president and his allies and his political operation have had incredible success. And as frustrating as that is the political dynamic that we find ourselves in. And you know, you're right, when we see Jon Stewart and others joke about this, of course it's funny. It's absurdist humor, but nevertheless, we all laugh, and that's fine. But at the same time, we also have to realize that efforts to undermine the integrity of recent history are pernicious and they undermine democracy. You know, our system relies in large part on a foundation of shared knowledge. And once that foundation is corrupted by partisans who have their own interests at heart, well, that chips away at the foundation in such a way that poses threats to democracy. So, yes, it is funny, but it's also serious, of course.
I mean, it's one of the things that I think your boss, Rachel Maddow, does so well is shows the yes. absurdity in the first few moments and then turns and says, this is why this is deadly serious.
Right. Yes. And there's nothing wrong with laughing at a buffoon lying to you. Right. This guy is Trump is a clown. He's the head of this circus. And so, yes, you know, there is a degree of humor in that. And one cannot help but chuckle at the absurdities. But I think that while we laugh, it's important to keep in mind that the stakes are high. You know, that the integrity of democracy matters. The integrity of the recent past matters. If we're going to put things right, and Trumpism have to be rejected. And so, yeah, of course I laugh along with everybody else. But at the same time, you know, there's a degree of seriousness, of course, to all of this that underpins the whole debate.
All right. So let us focus on that for a moment. I mean, even when the former president said that he had a larger crowd on January 6th than MLK had for his I Have a Dream speech. So, I mean, it's just yes. like yet another thing. And you're like, oh, OK. But what you point to, and this is what I want to focus on for a moment, is to yeah. how we understand why so many GOP voters have embraced this backward rewritten version of reality, to understand the strategy and the tactics that left them misinformed and left us scratching our heads thinking, why are they buying this?
Right. You know, and I think that this entire campaign is based on a series of what I refer to as pernicious pillars. You know, the first being that Republicans have decided that as part of this campaign, they have to be indifferent towards reality. And so I think that there's ample evidence to support that. The second pillar is the idea that Republicans have to be indifferent to shame, because if Republicans and Fox and their allies and this entire message operation were to be in any way sheepish, I think the public would see through that and fail. And so I think that you'll see them speak with enormous confidence, as if their version of reality is obviously true, even if the actual facts and truth and evidence suggest otherwise. The third is repetition. I think that we see Trump, for example, say the same lies, the same claims over and over and over again in this cartoonish level of repetition, because he's of the opinion that if he just says it enough, that brute force rhetorical strategy will prove successful. And I think in large part that's the case. And the fourth, of course, is the role of allies. No one person can rewrite history by himself or herself. Leaders and authoritarians need allies. They need, in the case of Trump, we see him, not only is it Trump, but it's Trump's operation, it's congressional Republicans, it's Fox, it's conservative radio, and so on and so on. And so when we look to your question, we look to see, well, why is it that this is successful? It's because of the bombardment of gaslighting is bolstered by this broader strategy that has been very well executed in recent years.
So for the past 9 years, Republicans, and especially Republicans in leadership, have taken the very fragile eggs in their basket and have turned them over to Donald Trump, who's just smashing them into like a Home Depot construction bucket. And yet it doesn't seem to matter. And you would think that these would be the people that would eventually say, oh, well, this isn't good. And then if enough Republicans and enough Republicans, especially in leadership, would stand up, that this would be something that wouldn't happen. We saw during the Republican National Convention, we saw in the days following the tragic assassination attempt of people just standing in line and basically saying, no, this is what we have to do to make our version of democracy work.
Yeah, and it's discouraging. You know, I was talking to some friends recently about, you know, my expectations in 2020. And I remember thinking at the time that Trumpism was failing. It was failing on economic fronts. It was failing on legal fronts. It was failing on public health and COVID crisis in terms of the federal response. And it was tempting to think, well, this is it. This is the discrediting of a vision. We're seeing MAGA vision being implemented and failing in real time. Trump's popularity was failing. The public was eager for change. And I thought, okay, well, yes, here we are. This is an experiment gone bad. American voters took a chance on electing a television personality to the nation's highest office. He was failing and flailing, and this was it. And when Donald Trump lost to Joe Biden by a sizable margin, I thought, great, well, all right, this is the end of an experiment. We tried it that way, and now voters now know better. And to my great disappointment, that was not the end of the experiment. To my great disappointment, we saw them rewrite the history of January 6th. We saw them rewrite the history of the 2020 election itself. And we saw a political party that was willing to go along. We saw Kevin McCarthy at the time, the top House Republican at the time, go down to Mar-a-Lago at the end of January, even after having privately denounced Trump to his own members weeks earlier. We saw Kevin McCarthy go and kiss the ring, and all of a sudden Trump was back and the campaign was on anew. And so I think that while as discouraging as that was, it doesn't necessarily mean that has to be the final chapter of this story. I think that now Americans have another chance. And I think really it's important to emphasize, Joe, for your listeners, that ultimately in a democracy, what plagues a democracy can be fixed by democracy. The more we see election results in which Republicans are rejected when they're trying to attack the integrity of reality and the integrity of the recent past, those results matter. You know, parties change when voters tell them that they have to. And so if and when we see a Democratic success in the fall, it'll give Republicans another opportunity to say, okay, well, we lost with Trump in 2018 and 2020 and 2022 and 2024. Perhaps now is the time to change course and to reject these tactics. You know, I don't know if that will happen. And obviously, it's going to be a competitive election, and I have no idea what's going to happen. But nevertheless, the opportunity for change is there.
Steve Bannon is our guest. The name of the new book is Ministry of Truth. Of course, Ministry of Truth was the propaganda agency in 1984 responsible for rewriting history in order to satisfy the demands of the ruling party. And so how do you look at who's behind this ministry, the current Ministry of Truth, and ultimately what we can do to shut that down?
Oh, right. This is my favorite question of all. Like, as I was writing the book, I remember I was talking with my wife about this phenomenon, and she kept coming back to the same answer. The same question. All right, smart guy, what are we going to do about it? And yeah, you've made your case. I'm persuaded. What are we going to do about it? And I think that, of course, is the underlying question in all of these debates. And so let me tell you a little bit about what I flesh this out. Now, of course, I would encourage your readers to read the book to kind of get a better sense of this in more detail. But broadly speaking, I think that there are three things to keep in mind. The first is that all of us as citizens have a role to play in in standing up in support of truth, because the truth needs champions. It cannot speak for itself. It needs champions, and we all have a role to play on that front. I also, you know, for example, I mentioned Barbara McQuaid, for example, had published a recent book in which she argued that we have a responsibility to make truth part of our national purpose. I found that incredibly persuasive. I think she's right. The second thing I'd emphasize is that news organizations and those of us who work in media have an important role to play because, of course, much of the public turns to us to help separate fact from fiction. And so the more we do that and the more responsible we are in knocking down efforts to rewrite history, the better off the public will be. But the third thing I want to emphasize, and I write about this in the final chapter of my book, I see a parallel between efforts to rewrite history and magic tricks. Now, I realize that might not be immediately intuitively true, but hear me out. I think that when we see a magician pull off an illusion, all of us are amazed. We're taken aback. We know there's an illusion. We know it's not real magic, but nevertheless, we're left to wonder, how did they do that? It's amazing. We're amazed, and it sometimes takes our breath away. But if we later find out how the magician pulled off the trick, well, then all of a sudden, it loses its potency. We're no longer amazed. We're no longer impressed. And I think the same is true with efforts to rewrite history. When this scam is exposed, it loses its potency, just like the magic trick. And I think ultimately the point I want to emphasize is that to expose the scam is to defeat the scam. The more we realize that we're seeing the same tactics over and over again, it's part of this systemic attack on reality, the more we see the efforts fail. And so I think that, broadly speaking, those are my proposed solutions. Now, obviously, there's no easy fix here, but I think that those three elements go a long way towards answering the question.
When it comes to what you just said, though, I mean, the first thing that comes to my mind is, well, amen. I mean, I hope that's the case. But it has been just, let's put aside the horror of it all just for a second and just say, it's been an incredible run to be able, and we're not by any case saying that the run is over, but let's just say if it is, it's 9 years this has been going on and is working. And if anything, yeah, that is disappointing and discouraging to think that it A, took that long, and B, that it's, you know, I said this about reality television, like eventually it has to stop, right? And no, it doesn't. And this is, it seems like we're in the same place. I mean, yeah, maybe, but then where are we going to be? If the vice president, Harris and Governor Walz win, will that still be seen as legitimate? And like, you just wonder, will this story ever have a happy ending?
I share your concerns, Joe. I mean, obviously, we can look ahead. And let's say, hypothetically, the Harris-Walz campaign is successful. I don't know if that's going to happen. The polls are very close. I have every reason to believe this will be a highly competitive and close election. But let's say, hypothetically, that they succeed. I mean, recent history tells us that it's very likely, if not certain, that Trump will say the exact same things, that the race was fixed, that the fix was in, that there is widespread corruption and so forth. And we also know, based on recent history, that the Republican base will respond the same way they have in the past, by trusting the word of a liar. And so, yes, this is, of course, discouraging. But the reason that I have some shred of hope here is that in time, parties that lose eventually realize that if they want to succeed and they want to regain power, they need to adapt, they need to evolve, they need to change. And so the more Trump and his party and those aligned with him fail, the stronger the incentive that party leaders will have to show Trump and his allies the door. That is my hope, and I can appreciate why that there's some skepticism, especially after what we've seen over the course of the last 9 years. But throughout history, the more parties lose, the more they have the incentive to change. And so I cling to that when struggling to sleep at night.
Well, and also, and if there is to be, and maybe I'm reading just way too much into this, but just over the last month of seeing the pendulum swing so far from one side, right, to the other, from the days of just after the assassination attempt, and the Republican National Convention to the start of the Democratic National Convention, my goodness.
Unrecognizable.
What we have seen has been amazing.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. You know, and I remember, you know, I was, of course, as part of my work with MSNBC, I covered the Republican convention in some detail. And as that convention wrapped up, I think it's fair to say that the consensus in Republican politics was not whether Donald Trump would win and not whether they would see victories up and down the ballot, but what the margins would be. It was a question of how enormous the landslide success was going to be. And this, at the same time, we look across the aisle, we see Democrats at this around that same time in just utter despair. There was no question in their mind that they were headed towards a landslide defeat. And there was great uncertainty as to what to do about it. And yet here we are, mid-August, and you know I hesitate to use the word vibes because it's just so overused. But I think it's fair to say the general atmosphere in American politics right now has completely reversed course. The same people who were elated at the end of the Republican convention are now facing similar despair and panic and anxiety, as reflected by Donald Trump's social media account and the kind of content that he publishes on a daily basis. And it's Democrats who are not only enthusiastic about voting, but they're feeling some optimism for the first time in quite a while. And it's just a reminder of how quickly things can change in politics. And for what it's worth, we don't yet know what future changes are in store. We don't know how a month from now what the landscape will look like, or a month after that, or a month after that. And so, you know, I guess the good news for those of us who work in media is that we won't be bored.
Absolutely. Well, the book is just an amazing chronicle of what has happened and what is happening. The name of the book is Ministry of Truth, Democracy, Reality, and the Republicans' War on the Recent Past. It's so well written and so well thought out. Steve, I thank you so much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you so much, Joe.
Thank you very much. Take care. Again, the name of the book, Ministry of Truth. It is published by Mariner. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.